You're listening to the Woman's Hour Power List from BBC Radio 4.
Well, I think more than vast wealth, I was lucky enough to actually inherit a foundation. So there was some career path, if you want to call it that, already laid out. And, of course, in Israel as well, it was there. The fundamentals were there.
What were you doing in Israel then with the money?
We were mainly building schools at that time. That was our big thing. And as a gift to my father on his 75th birthday, I restored the house that Chaim Weizmann lived in, which was built before the war in the 30s. And I restored that as a sort of museum. And then I built the City of Jerusalem Museum. That was my first real project. And he died as I was starting that.
And what were your plans for this country?
Well, the great thing we started with was the Turner Wing, the Claw Gallery at the Tate. And that was, again, after he died, looking for some big thing to do. Both of us were already fascinated by the Opera House. My father loved the opera, and we used to go a lot together. And I remember he wanted to do something for the Opera House then, before he died, but the occasion never really arose. So as a memorial to him, I decided to do the Tate, and that was really my first thing.
To what extent did you feel it made you powerful?
Well, I don't think it ever made me feel powerful, even today. I think the use of the word power, when you apply it to something like what I do, is not right. It's influence rather than power. I think you can influence people, and you can offer them an opportunity to do something. And in turn, you yourself can do something that obviously you couldn't do if you didn't have the money.
So how did your position differ from your father's in terms of power?
Dad was a businessman, and he used his power for that. He invented something called a takeover. I mean, we're talking years ago. Nowadays, that happens all the time. But he was a sort of pioneer of that, and that made him powerful.
How do you choose now what projects you will fund?
We have really sort of refined what we do. We do mainly projects in the sphere of education, within the arts world, in museums and in establishments. And we try to open up all that to children and young people. And that's our main thing in the Claw Education Centres. And, of course, we're doing all these leadership courses, which, again, I think, if you want to say power, they are definitely influencing the arts world.
How?
Well, it all started when there was a sort of huge shuffle around of jobs in the museum world, and it was always the same candidates coming up. And I remember talking to Nick Sirota about it, and he said, well, why don't you do something about it? And I said, well, what? And he said, well, I don't know. He said, but why don't you try and do courses about leadership in the arts field specifically? So right at that time, Michael Kaiser, who left the Opera House to go and run the Kennedy Center in Washington, was also starting up that sort of course. So we modeled it vaguely on that. And I hired Chris Smith, who just left the government, and he started up the Claw Leadership Courses, which is hugely successful, and I'm enormously proud of them. And they'll be 10 years old next year, and we've got about 250 young, I mean, compared to everybody else, leaders in all the cultural fields. And about four or five of them are now running museums, they're running major theatre companies, all the regional theatre companies, and they're quite high up in the Arts Council. And they're called Claw 1s to 10s, and everywhere I go there's a Claw, and I'm really very proud of it.
You have had two long and significant relationships, latterly with Sir Jocelyn Stevens. How did you cope with that relationship breaking up when he left for a younger woman?
How did I cope? Rather badly at the beginning, but of course now I'm very happy and I'm very independent. And I think nobody likes being, as you put it, left for a younger woman, but of course all the people who knew the truth knew that it wasn't quite that. So, sadly, the breakup would have happened anyhow.
Now, there is a story that you were once kept waiting by him when he was managing director at Express Newspapers. So you sent a message saying if he didn't come down at once, you'd buy the paper and sack him. How true is that?
I don't think it's any truer than the story about him throwing the filing cabinets out of the window. I think there's an element in both those stories that might be true, but they're not true.
But you wish it were true.
Yes, I wish it were true. I think it's the most wonderful thing. I wish I had said it, actually. It's very good, yes, but I didn't.
And how close an eye do you keep on the money? Because it's reported you sign every single cheque yourself.
I do, I sign every cheque. Every cheque we give away. Especially if you're dealing with vast sums of money in a place like Israel, which is a long way away. I sign every single cheque, so I know what we are spending, and I know how each project, so to speak, is progressing.
What impact, as you look back, do you reckon you've had on protecting the arts from consistent lack of investment?
I would like to think that we've helped a little bit, but I always used to say that in the old days when I started out on this, especially in the arts, our money was the icing on the cake. Because you must remember when I first started at the Opera House, I think we raised something like 5 or 6% of what we spent. The rest came from government. And now, of course, we raise well over 70%. That now our money really is sort of the middle bit of the cake that keeps everything going. We haven't been able to stop a lot of the cuts. And I've always thought that our money ought to go to things that government couldn't afford to do. So we don't actually fund direct costs of institutions. We tend to fund programmes that wouldn't happen otherwise.
What are your main projects at the moment?
Most of our energy has been for the last several years on the Jewish Community Centre, which is opening this weekend in the Finchley Road, and which has taken 10 years. We had a breakfast 10 years ago to launch it, and nobody really believed it was going to happen. I think to a certain extent, even me. And we open next week. It's tremendously exciting, and I hope it'll be probably the best thing that we've ever done.
What do you hope it'll achieve?
I hope it will bring together Jews of all different strands and non-Jews to see how they can cooperate and what they can do. And it's going to raise the face a bit, the profile of the Jews, which has tended to go underground for all sorts of reasons. And we're a very divided community in London. And I just hope this will give us a new spring in our step and show everybody what we can do.